Good afternoon, and welcome to our presentation, Differentiating with Data. My name is Ginger Crist, and I am an associate editor for Industry Week, which is producing this event. This event is sponsored by Information Builders. During today's webinar, you will learn how manufacturing companies can differentiate themselves and become more effective by deploying easy-to-consume data to their employees, supply chains, and customers. As part of this webinar, we will have a live Q&A session. We will be accepting questions throughout the session today. To improve the chances of your question being addressed, don't wait until the end of the event to submit them. Ask them as they occur to you. To send in your question, type it into the Q&A box, then click the Submit button. Now, let me introduce today's speakers. John Brandt, CEO and founder of the MPI Group, and Jake Friewald, Vice President of Corporate Marketing for Information Builders. John has spent more than two decades studying leadership and has become a management innovator and an expert on manufacturing and technology. Jake has held technical and marketing positions in the software industry for the past 20 years. Please welcome John and Jake. John will be speaking first.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It's John Brandt. I'm CEO of the MPI Group. And Jake, good to be with you again. Good to be on with IW. We are going to have a great webinar today. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff in terms of how do you bridge the gap? How do you get to not just doing more revenue, not just driving more sales, but how do you actually get to more profitability? So we got a lot to cover here, but before we start, since it is a webinar about data, I have a question that I want to get some data from you. And first of all, let's ask everybody out there, how innovative is your company in your industry? You have four choices. Please do this. We've got, 30, 60 seconds to do this. Number one, leading edge. Number two, competitive. Number three, playing catch up. Or four, not innovative. All right, let's get some responses out there. All right, what we see here is we've got about... Terrific. If you look at this, we've got about a little under 70% who are leading edge or competitive. We do have a number who are playing catch up and a few who are not innovative. Well, what we hope to do today is talk a little bit about how we can help you maybe become more competitive and more innovative, even if you're at the upper end of this this chart here. So, as I mentioned before, we're going to talk today about bridging the gap, three keys to competitiveness and sustainable profits, and we're going to talk about some strategies in some ways have been around for a while, but the way people are thinking about them now is different, and especially the way that data is being applied to them is different than it has been in the past. So let's get right into it. We're going to talk about really five different things. We're going to talk about the manufacturing landscape, innovation, talent, process improvement, and how can you at your company get started. So this has been a wonderful and weird recovery that we've all enjoyed since the recent unpleasantness of 2008-2009, those of us. The problem that we're seeing now is that we've got a generation of managers out there who were scarred by the downturn, and we actually have a lot of people in positions who may not even know or remember how to manage in a strong economy. Because make no mistake about it, this is a long-term recovery. It has been led by manufacturing within the United States. My firm, and I live in Cleveland, Ohio, and for the only time I can remember in my lifetime, Cleveland actually led the recovery back, in part because we had so much manufacturing and there was so much difficulty back then. But what we're seeing now is that people are having to make a number of decisions that they haven't had to make for several years. Because when you've got a strong economy, when orders are good, you have to kind of switch your mindset from being just only focused on cost controls. How do we keep the doors open? After, you have to change your mindset from we've had to lay off people, we've had to go here, and how do we reduce, how do we not hire? And then the other thing that we've seen, which was fairly dramatic during the downturn, was an entire, almost mini generation of technological investments that were delayed, suspended, canceled over a period of years. And what that has done is it has left a lot of firms improving revenues, but probably not getting all the profitability that they should have gotten out of those improving revenues. So how good is it right now? I know in every firm, everywhere, we've all got challenges, everybody's challenged, but make no mistake about it, the time to be making money in manufacturing is right now. The numbers don't lie. Manufacturing's real value add reached $2.08 trillion in 2013, which was up versus the year before. Non-durable goods, which has been sort of the leader of the entire growth back in manufacturing, was up even more, 5%. And manufacturing employment, after years of declines, is actually up again this year, well over 12 million in the United States. It is a great time to be a manufacturer in the United States. That is the reason you're seeing so much about reshoring and jobs coming back to the United States as well. There's anecdotal evidence. There's also statistical evidence that it is happening. So, great news, right? It is great news, except I'm really struck by the fact that when I go around and I talk to manufacturing CEOs, marketers, leaders, we hear, yeah, it's wonderful that revenues are up, but we still feel intense price pressures. A little bit of this is legacy of how the recovery started. If you recall, commodity prices spiked first, and also pricing power, at least perception-wise, felt very limited for most management teams. So what happened is that as revenues increased and people started going, pricing power wasn't there. Costs actually rose a little bit faster at the start. I don't think we've caught up from that yet. The other issue, though, is that you have a number of firms who, during the downturn, did all the stuff you should do. Well, some of them did what they should do. Some did what they shouldn't have done. Some of them did it in a planful way. Others just cut. The problem is that when you have a rapid increase in production, because we've all got orders now, you have to be able to meet that demand. And the problem is if your systems, your data, if everything isn't ready, you are very likely to make the wrong decisions going forward. And we've seen a lot of firms over the last couple of years sort of making the wrong investments. You know, maybe they had a delayed IT project and they won't go ahead and implement it, but maybe it was the right thing in 2007, but it's not the right thing in 2012 or 2013. We see people saying, oh my gosh, you know, we got to increase inventory, and they put inventory or WIP in the wrong places. A lot has changed in the manufacturing sector. We see people who are excited about launching new SKUs, entering new markets, et cetera, except we're seeing an increasing number of regulations from governments, and also we're seeing a huge trend toward what we call de facto regulation, where large customers in an industry, you know, the Walmarts, the General Electrics, whomever, are essentially sometimes coming up with restrictions that are more tough and more stringent than local governments might have. We also see, as we go forward here, a tendency sometimes to just keep doing product development, what I used to call the field of dreams product development theory, which is if we build it, somebody will buy it, instead of taking advantage of some of the new opportunities we have with social media to see what customers are really thinking, what they're talking about. And really this all comes down to, if you think about it, people in some ways have not been prepared for growth. We have this generation of managers who've just been, you know, just figured out, well, oh my gosh, we've got to hunker down. Well, you also have to plan for success, and we see too many firms right now where that is not the case. The question then is, okay, if you want to change that, if you would like to not just have increased orders and, you know, increased profits, yes, if you would like to optimize profitability, if you would like to maximize your opportunities to enter new markets, launch new SKUs, how do you do that? And we survey thousands and thousands of manufacturing firms everywhere. We talk to hundreds of executives. What we find over and over again is that the keys now, there seem to be three things you need to focus on if you want to grow, but grow profitably. And those three core strategies are innovation, talent, and process improvement. The really interesting thing, and the reason I was really excited to be part of this webinar today, is that there are a number of opportunities to use information in new ways, big data, business intelligence, analytics, et cetera, to help drive these strategies in ways that we couldn't imagine even 5 years ago, much less 10 or 15 years ago. There is a way to turbocharge these strategies going forward. So let's get right to it. You know, the first strategy here, because we don't have a whole lot of time today together, let's talk about innovation. What do we mean by that? Well, what we're finding is that, as I mentioned before, we've got manufacturers who are innovating across the board with new processes, new practices, different approaches, new services, new products. And we're seeing that some of the leaders, and including some of those on this call, congratulations to you, the ones who jumped out of the gate fastest during the recovery were the ones who, for whatever way and in whatever manner, were able to keep their product development pipelines full, and they got out of the gate fastest. What we are seeing, though, with other firms is it doesn't mean that others can't catch up, but it does mean there's a playbook they're going to have to run. And what that playbook is for innovation, if you're going to be smart about it, is you've got to focus your innovation on four keys. And those four keys are intellectual property, getting a lead position as it comes to regulations, because these are increasingly important, not just in making a product successful, but sometimes in making it whether you're going to be able to sell it to a customer or sell it into a given market. How do you leverage iterative innovation? The idea being, you know, we have this idea that somebody is going to go into the woods and come out with the next great product that nobody's ever thought of, whereas where we see companies that are doing great things right now are the ones who are trying to figure out, okay, how do we do increasingly iterative, you know, the next step, the next phase, the next version of this product, because that can in some ways, especially given the way product cycles are, be even more profitable overall. And then how do you innovate beyond the product itself? How do you innovate around it? So before we go any further, I got a question about compensation package, and we're going to come back to this later. We've set up this webinar, so we'll have the data for later on. If we're talking about talent, which is very important innovation as well, how competitive is your company's compensation package for your location and industry? You got four choices: highly competitive, competitive, fair, or weak. Go ahead and put in your answers there. Well, that's interesting. We had a lot of people doing innovative, but since you need the talent for innovation, and we find that we've got maybe half who are competitive or highly competitive, the rest of the people are finding that. And we're going to get to that in a minute because this affects innovation, and there are some strategies for how we can fix that maybe with talent as well. But when we talk about innovation, when we talk about how do you do this and what is that talent going to do for you, what you need to do is have that talent focus on how do we develop products that integrate intellectual property or use it? And that is especially important in any developed manufacturing economy, the OECD countries, the United States, because even with what we're seeing with reshoring right now, with manufacturing coming back, it is extremely, and I mean extremely unlikely that you are ever going to see commodity manufacturing coming back to the U.S. or to developed countries. It just doesn't make economic sense. And what's really interesting is that when you take a look at why U.S. manufacturing is doing well, it tends to be manufacturers who are focusing on, okay, we know we're going to be a manufacturer, build a product, but how do we make it intellectual property rich? How do we build in sensors? How do we build in electronics? How do we build in features that nobody else can design? Maybe there's a way that we do it ourselves. The interesting thing about that is that when you look at the numbers, the United States has a greater share of manufacturing value add from high technology than most of the other OECD countries. And that's kind of a direct result of the fact that the U.S. spends more on R&D than other countries. The interesting thing, just as a note, R&D spending is rising pretty dramatically in Taiwan, in China, and in Korea right now. So when we see manufacturers doing great things with innovation right now, when they look at their product, they're asking themselves, how do we do this in a way that sort of embeds even more intellectual property, either in the product itself or in the process by which it is made? Other thing we see increasingly, and this is a really interesting point here, is that we see manufacturers who are doing well right now with innovation are looking at regulations not necessarily as a straitjacket that keeps them from profitability, but as an opportunity for them to enter markets that maybe their competitors can't get to. We have seen an enormous, in our surveys and interviewing executives, an enormous amount of concern right now over supply chain traceability, including, you know, tracking products, materials, components, you know, back through different tiers of suppliers. I mean, if you're a supplier, if you are in the clothing industry and you're sourcing from Bangladesh, you better have somebody on the ground going to that factory in a variety of places. Well, what we're seeing is that a number of manufacturers, instead of looking at that as a burden, are saying, okay, what if we took a more active role in engaging with government or within industries or within standard-setting bodies and helping to draft requirements for what's coming out rather than waiting to comply. That has a couple of advantages, right? It has an advantage in that it allows you to obviously know what's going on, but it also allows you to figure out, okay, if we've got an advance here, maybe we can help to build that into the standards. What we see over and over again is that the firms who participate actively in the regulatory process, not necessarily fighting it, but figuring out how they can be a part of it, are doing better than those who are playing catch-up. Because playing catch-up means you're trying to figure out how to comply when somebody has already gotten there. The other thing we see is a strategy being pursued by a number of manufacturers right now. You know, all of us, we would all love game-changing innovation, right? That would be terrific. So we are, we'd love that. Problem is those are few and far between. Sometimes it's a bluebird. You can't always predict when it's going to happen. What we are seeing is that manufacturers who are doing really interesting stuff with profitability and their growth right now are taking a look at consumer demand and regulatory requirements, and they're figuring out, okay, let's do iterative changes. How do we version this over a series? You know, can we take this product and knowing what we know about how it's going to evolve, how the market will evolve, how regulations are likely to evolve in various markets, how do we do different versions of this over a 5 or 10 year period? We can sometimes see that a new technology, even in an old product, can boost demand. We also see that sometimes this iterative innovation is not even so much in the product itself, but it is in relabeling or repackaging products and emphasizing attributes that have always been there but are now more important. Maybe it's related to sustainability. Maybe it's related to green concerns. It's really interesting. If you take a look then at another component, and this is really key here, about how manufacturers are doing great things with innovation, it comes down to looking beyond the product itself. Okay? Everybody expects you to do a great product now. What they want to know is what are the services that you're going to add onto the product itself? How can you improve customer support? How can you figure out a way to do kitting or pre-assembly if you're selling into an OEM? How can you engage or friend your customers with best practices or tips, or maybe even get them to suggest new iterations of the product? How do you coordinate suppliers and the entire value chain for your customers going forward? There's tons of great examples. We don't have time to talk about all of them, but look at Apple. It's a great example of several of these components here. You know, several years ago, Apple switched their desktop Macs from the PowerPC to Intel processors, and what's really interesting is at that time, the product didn't really change that much, but they put a more powerful technology into an existing product and did very well. At the same time, you know, they launched the stores with Genius Bars. And if you remember back when they launched this 10, 11 years ago, everybody thought they were crazy for trying to set up a retail network because computer stores were not doing that well. And yet what they saw was not a computer store, but they saw an opportunity to wrap service and a customer experience around the product itself. And I just encourage you to go to the App Store or go online to Apple.com or Mac.com, take a look at it. They have so many iterations that the products, even though they are not custom, can feel custom to customers. And they've obviously grown pretty well over the last decade or so. So if you're going to try to innovate then, there are some key questions you probably should want to ask yourself. First of all, you got to ask, what do your customers actually consider value? And that is maybe different from what you think value is. And if you're not out talking to customers, looking at social media, collecting data on that, you're likely to miss some components of value that may have migrated when you weren't looking. In particular, you have to ask customers, what do they say? Find out what they're saying about your products, whether to you directly or via social media. How are they using them? How are they leveraging them? What do they want in next generation products? Why do they like your company? What triggers a new product purchase for them? How are you getting that information? So that's innovation. We talked a little bit before that talent really can drive innovation. It's extremely important. It's also an enormous challenge for manufacturers right now. It's also going to be important when we talk about talent for how that drives process improvement. That's one of the other data questions. It's the third polling question, the last one for you, so please answer now. What best describes your company's approach to process improvement? One, it's part of our culture, it's a company-wide program, we do improvements when needed, or we don't have any approach to process improvement. Go ahead and fill that out, please. All right. Well, we find you've got about 45% say it's either part of their culture or there's a company-wide program. You have well over half saying that it's a sort of a sometimes or no approach at all. And that's going to be interesting. We'll talk about process improvement in a minute because talent also drives that as well. One of the things that has been striking about this recovery, because we remember early on this recovery, even in manufacturing, was called the jobless recovery. And that was in part when you looked at the statistics, it was very clear overtime stats went dramatically up in manufacturing. And it was clear that manufacturers did not necessarily believe that the recovery was real, and they were trying to do everything they could to keep hiring down. What has happened is that the recovery's gone on long enough now that you're starting to see manufacturers looking for employment. You saw the employment for employees. Employment has gone up, and is, as often happens, then it's supply and demand. Talent has become more scarce. This is being driven and exacerbated, especially in manufacturing, with skilled trades and with senior executives, by the fact that we have a demographic issue in this country. The first of the baby boomers were born in 1945. The last were born in 1964. They are retiring right now. And actually what we're seeing is anecdotal evidence that many of them deferred their retirements because, as you recall, we all had 401ks in 2006. By 2009, they were 201ks or 101ks. Now, with the market going back up, people are feeling steady and secure enough that they can go ahead and retire. In manufacturing, this has been a particular issue. We saw during this entire, during the recession, we saw as unemployment got close to 10% and in some places higher, we still saw manufacturers who could not find the skilled workers they needed. So if you're going to do this, what do you have to do? Well, if you're a manufacturing leader, you have to focus on three things. You have to focus on finding who the new manufacturing employees are going to be, because there just aren't enough of them right now. Do they have problem-solving skills, And who's going to lead them? It's really important when we're thinking about how to succeed going forward and how to be profitable that you have the most important decisions you make are who you bring in, how you train them, and how you keep them, and how you leverage them. Because in a westernized, developed country, manufacturing situation, we do not see a model that works that isn't highly decentralized, that puts decision-making close to the line and close to customers. Those people who are doing that are making thousands upon thousands of decisions every day, every week, every month that affect your profitability. How smart do you want them to be? This is driven even more to more importance by the fact that all the automation that we're seeing, new technologies, have pretty much changed the factory floor from the image most of us had from our childhood. Some stats came out last year. At this point, in the United States, under 40% of all employees who work for a manufacturing firm actually make something. Let's flip that stat around. What that means is that over 60% of everybody who works at a manufacturing firm never touches the product. What we also find is that 31%, nearly a third of manufacturing employees, now are in management or professional jobs. Manufacturing is vastly different. You can't do it without a degree. We saw the number of manufacturing workers with graduate degrees increase by nearly 20% over a 12-year period. You have to be smart to work in manufacturing now. You have to be literate. You have to be numerate. And more, you have to have some kind of a degree or advanced degree to do this. Well, this has profound implications for those who are trying to bring people in the manufacturing firms. It means, along with that, that they have to be not just smart, but they have to know different things. And one of the reasons they have to be smart is because of the different things they have to know. What we find in studies, we do a manufacturing study in plants, and what we found is that a third of executives told us that their facilities were following an improvement methodology based on either Lean or the Toyota Production System. We all found that 70%, almost 70%, had a continuous improvement program in place. What is the common theme for most continuous improvement programs, and certainly for Lean or the Toyota Production System, is that workers at every level have to be trained to take action and have to be trained to identify and solve problems. This requires, first of all, they got to be smart. Second, they got to be trained in how to do it. Thirdly, and maybe less widely recognized, is they have to have social skills to be able to work with others, to team in problem solving, and they have the right have to have the right technical skills to do that. It is no surprise that in the studies that we have done in manufacturing, honestly, going back over a decade, no matter how we look at it, no matter how we ask, manufacturers with smarter employees, and by that I mean manufacturers who train their employees more and make them smarter, manufacturers who train more get better results. And it's nowhere clearer than in taking a look at the stats of those who are closest to world-class status in manufacturing versus those who are furthest from it. If you are at or near world-class status in manufacturing, you are far more likely to train more than 20 hours a week or more than 40 hours a week. If you are near the bottom of the pile, one of the reasons, it seems to be from correlations, is that you just don't train enough. It is a profound difference, and we've seen it over and over again, and the gap is only going to increase as we go forward. Now, you got to find really smart people. You got to get them graduate degrees. You got to get them trained up, but you can't just let them loose on the plant floor. You're going to have to find people to lead them, and this is an underreported challenge in manufacturing in the United States. We did a survey. We found that more than 50% of manufacturing firms in the United States said that there was a potential for a leadership succession at the top in the next 5 years. And it comes back to that demographic issue. Think about who the people are who are leading these firms. Now, they're the baby boomers. They're going to retire. They're going to get on a boat or a golf course or something. So the question then becomes, who is going to lead these firms going forward? We're on a great roll with manufacturing in the United States right now. Who's going to lead these firms? The smartest firms, the smartest leaders are the ones we see who are figuring out how can we put in a talent management system, a performance management system, to find the best high-potential candidates, identify them, and promote them. And to do that, you're going to need data. And I know Jake's going to talk about some of this later on here. But first of all, it's sort of like the question with your customers. You know, what do your customers value? Well, what do your employees value? What motivates them? What makes them want to come? It's not necessarily the same things it used to be. People nowadays want to know, what kinds of skills are we going to learn at this job going forward? How do you attract new talent? How do you train? How much training do you do? What does a compensation package look like? I can't tell you how many manufacturers you will talk to, and you'll find out, you'll say, well, okay, so how does your package stack up industry-wide or within your region with the people you're competing with? And people don't necessarily know. That's not good enough if you want to have profitable growth and be a leader. And the competition out there can be pretty extreme. One great example is General Mills. It's one of Fortune's 100 best companies to work for. They have a culture that recognizes that employees have unique needs when it comes to their benefits. They pay not only just good salaries and bonuses, but in holidays, but they have a whole bunch of other benefits that can be customized for employees, whether it's medical and dental or stock programs, auto insurance, educational assistance, and really a focus in on how people want to work and live now with flexible work arrangements, whether it's a flexible workspace configuration or flex time itself. They also have lots of other programs for child care, adoption, et cetera. So you got to be innovative in different ways. You got to find your talent in different ways. The last thing that we see you've got to do is you've got to do those first two things, but you have still got to do what we used to call maybe in a reductive way, cost control. You need to be focused on process improvement. How do we create more and better value for clients, customers, and ourselves every year going forward? Now, we all know that every company, everything you do consists of processes. What we see the best manufacturing companies doing right now, and the ones who are figuring out how to take that innovation, take that talent, and create more profits, is they are setting higher internal goals every year. They're looking at what their competitors are doing, sometimes looking outside of industry to see what is happening. And then, most importantly, they're starting to take some of those best practices, some of those improvements and those process improvements, and extending them out to their value chain, to their suppliers, and sometimes even working with their customers. It is deceptively simple to do this. You can use a variety of systems. Our data we've been trying for years to figure out which system works better. I have some opinions on it, but the data says it doesn't matter so much which improvement, whether it's Six Sigma, Lean, Toyota Production, as whether you have a methodology in place and how extensive the implementation of that methodology is. Now, the interesting thing is most of the methods at some level come back to PDCA, and this is something that we need to teach every employee all the time. How do you plan? Do you identify processes and look for opportunities? Are you doing value mapping? Do you apply solutions to get rid of waste, improve the process? Check. Do you go back and say, hey, this worked, or no, it didn't work, and then if it didn't work, you learn from it and you do something different, and then you act and adjust. If something works, make it the new standard, apply it everywhere else you can within the firm. The issue that we see at a lot of firms is that it is hard sometimes to find what is the meaningful metric. A lot of times when you look at a firm, you'll see that the metrics they're tracking a book full of metrics, some of which the person who requested it died several years ago, and nobody's looking at that metric now anymore anyway. What you want to do is, on an ongoing basis, at least every year or two, is take a look at the metrics you're looking at. And I want to stress this is not just on the manufacturing floor, because sometimes people think that. In general, we see that manufacturers don't measure very well in this country, and that measurement gets worse the farther you are from the factory floor. What you want to do is say, okay, let's look at a given process, whether it's on the production floor, whether it's somewhere else in the firm. What are the metrics that actually make a difference? How can we get data on them that is as close to real time as possible? And the reason you want that is because you want to not just find out in the rearview mirror, oh man, a month ago, that was really awful. That's why we lost money. You'd like to have a chance to make corrective actions. You have to make sure these metrics aren't important only to a given department, but that they align with corporate objectives and with the entire mission, and that they are very clear in what they are showing you. They ought to be able to be put onto an executive dashboard. So, just a few suggestions here. We've got a library full of metrics. Happy to chat with anybody about it at this point. But if you're looking at common performance indicators with costs, you might look at, you know, cost of goods sold, COGS, as a percentage of sales or shipments, overhead as a percentage of it, support costs, supplier costs. You know, I know everybody here is going to be downloading this presentation afterwards, so I'm not going to read you every word on here because you would want to kill yourself, and I would too if we did that. If you look at common performance indicators for quality, you know, you could look at things like customer reject rates, warranty costs, rework as a percentage of sales, scrap as a percentage of sales. If you want to look at, you know, and I hate to call it transportation or logistics because really who cares about that? What customers want to know and what you want to know because it affects profitability is delivery and speed. Did people get what they wanted when they wanted it fast enough to make them happy and fast enough for us to make a dollar? And so if you're going to look at that, you want to look at things like machine availability, perfect deliveries, was it on time and to all quality specifications, even if the customer had special specifications for that, supply chain lead time, lead times from suppliers. And if you're looking at EHS, you want to look at things like employee turnover rates. You want to look at OSHA, that. If you want to get, pardon me, a little bit more advanced than that, you even could take a look at product carbon footprints, or energy per unit of product, or reuse, recycle product percentages. In the supply chain, you can be looking at service levels, performance comparisons to other suppliers, quality, etc. Whatever metrics you choose, and each company has to have its own set of metrics, I can't stress that enough, you want to make sure that you're not just tracking stuff, you want to make sure that it's going into a repository, and it is being transformed with intelligence and analytics into something that actually offers insights, something that helps for organization-wide problem solving. You want to make sure that you're using it in ways that helps to drive improvement events, works with specific customers to address their issues, their satisfaction, and you want to have something that takes a look at trends over a period of time that is going to help you budget for the future. You know, if you're looking at an area and you can see, for example, that maintenance has been an issue in a facility or two over a period of time, that's probably, if you've got the right data and can draw some trend lines out of it, going to inform your investment decisions going forward in terms of prioritization and what you're going to do. It's really important in that prioritization because if you can get the right data, and we're seeing this now, with the Internet of Things, with machines talking to machines. We're able to collect even energy per unit of product right now, where it's starting to allow you to figure out, okay, if we've got a portfolio of production lines or production facilities, let's analyze it and take a look at where is the best place for us to produce this product. Where is the best place for us to produce a new product? And sometimes, if you're looking seriously at improvement metrics and if there's a lot going on there, it may obviate the need to build a new facility or to lease a new facility going forward. I want to stress this is not some nary-fairy thing only for the biggest firms or for firms that, you know, have something amazing happen. This is for firms of every type. There was a printer called Drummond Press that began its lean journey in 2010. They hired a coach. And one of the things I love is that they did a lot with their production, but they also did a lot in non-production areas, including a new office layout that improved their communications, a new invoicing process. And what was really interesting is they figured out that they were able to reduce their fixed overhead by over 12%. They were able to cut their raw material inventory by 50%. They were able to reduce their accounts receivables by 21 days. Now, anybody who's had any exposure to accounts receivables and finances for a manufacturing firm knows that reducing your accounts receivable by 21 days is a landmark achievement that, especially in bad times, can be the difference between staying in business and having to go hat in hand to the bank. So we've talked a lot about a lot of stuff in a short period of time. It can seem overwhelming if you haven't done it yet. So how do you get started? Well, first thing is, think of those three core strategies: innovation, talent, process improvement. What is the plan? And then the biggest thing is benchmark yourself. Where are we at versus our competitors and versus what we think trends are going forward? The huge advantage that you have now, if you take advantage of it, is the ability to grab information that can inform your strategic plans. Figuring out where that information resides, how do we get it, and how do we transform it into insights. Now, I want to say this is harder than it looks, and I know Jake will probably touch on some of this in his presentation. It is harder than it looks to even get good information, especially if your organization has any global component whatsoever. I mean, we know about being in multiple currencies or multiple languages, across borders, multiple products. What we see more and more with firms that are focusing on these three key strategies and are trying to use information with them is that they are actually figuring out, okay, we have to have a data quality program. Same way we have a product quality program, we have to have a data quality program. And we have to almost have a quality steward or a quality manager who's going to make sure that every function is receiving and transmitting data, that the data is cleansed and updated regularly, and that is responsible for figuring out how does the analytics system sift through that to find the insights that we need. So what I would suggest, if you're thinking about how are we going to use information differently to help drive these strategies, is you want to ask some questions of yourselves, of your customers. And first of all, I'd say, do you do enough out with customers that are you ever surprised by how a customer uses your product? Do you have a regular report that you're getting on what customers are saying about you on social media? Do you have an idea how customers use products after they've sold? I mean, do you go back to people a year or two later and say, how are you using the product? Because all of those are opportunities to drive iterative innovation or add services or aftermarket products that can drive profitability. In terms of your employees, we so often see companies that will do exit interviews. I much prefer to see companies that do stay interviews or surveys that say, hey, why do you love it here? Why do you stay? Have you taken a look at what are the skills you're going to need, not just now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And could you name off the top of your head the one technology or a couple of technologies that are causing the biggest headache for you going forward that maybe you're not sure how your organization is going to manage toward? In terms of process improvement, I'd ask a couple things. First of all, do you think that you've got the right metrics right now across the enterprise? Are they aligned? Are they things that actually make a difference? Or are they some of those metrics that are just being collected because the CEO in 1972 wanted it and nobody's looked at it since then? which of these key metrics are the biggest problem for your management staff to either manage or maybe even collect the data from? And do you have a system set up where people can see how their actions and the metrics that they impact actually impact the company overall? With that, I'll be happy to answer questions, but I'm going to defer that till after Jake has talked. And with that, I'm going to give it back to Ginger, who will introduce Jake. And Jake, you'll take it away.